Thank you. Glad to be here. Really glad I can talk at Lodge's symposium. It's been a great collaboration. I've been working with this group since the late 90s, and I think looked the other day, Lee Wong and Lodge and I have 50 or so papers, peer-reviewed papers published together. So it's been great. Looking forward to more collaborations. I got to work with USGS because of this, and Bear Crop Science, and lots of different people. And I'm in agreement with using the field data with the models, and we've done a lot of that. So I'm going to talk about an application that we're currently using the model for, and this is nitrate loss to drains from a Midwest bioenergy production. So as usual, I have a lot of help, a lot of collaborators on this project, and really appreciate all of that. So in the U.S. Midwest, as many of us know, you've got the soil saturated in the spring. To get the highest crop production, you have to add drainage, tile drainage. Usually these are about a meter to meter and a half below the surface. They drain the soil, and you get the higher crop production. But as what happens there is you have some chemicals associated with this drainage. Nitrate's the one we're interested in on this talk. Tom had talked about pesticides. So that nitrate that's going into the tile drains, exiting into streams and rivers, is then making it to the Mississippi River, eventually down into the Gulf of Mexico, and this contributes to the hypoxia problem in the Gulf that many of us are familiar with. So what we've done in Iowa is look at conservation practices that can reduce that nitrate loss to drainage. And one of the more effective processes or one of the more effective treatments that we have, or conservation practices, is putting winter rye on, where we plant it in the fall, and then in the spring it grows some more. There's a lot of nitrate associated with that. It reduces the loss of nitrate to the tile drains, and then this is terminated in early spring. But there's limited data sets, limited field data for this. These are expensive experiments, take a lot of time and energy, and so what we do is we've applied the model to it to see if the model can match the field results, and the model's done pretty well on lots of different cover crop type sets. I see a few other people in here that have used the cover crops. Also, Zeming worked at Iowa State with Matt Helmers, and he has some other data sets that have worked pretty well. So the model works pretty well. And so what we did was we said the model's working well. Let's look at the effect of winter rye across the U.S. Corn Belt. So we had, mouse is working right here. We had about 40 to 50 sites with weather data, some management information like application rates of fertilizer, timing of planting and harvest, etc. So we were able to apply the model, the tested model that was working pretty well in Iowa, and also we tested a few other sites around the U.S. and seemed to work well. So we were able to use that at these 50-some sites, and we could estimate that the model reduced the nitrate loss in tile drain about 40% or so. And then we could take those results, look at it on a county-by-county basis, depending on how much corn and soybeans in the county, how much tile drainage they have. We could estimate how much nitrate could be reduced into tile drains if we added a cover crop. And we had about 20% over this. Was it a five-state? We have Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. And the cover crop can reduce the nitrate loss about 20%, or 150 million kilograms N per year. So a good bit, 20%. That's a good bit. There's other practices that would have to be on top of that to reduce it further. So the problem, one of the problems with a winter cover crop, though, they reduce the nitrate loss a good bit, have a lot of soil quality benefits, but there's also a cost to this. They're, I think, maybe $30, $40 per hectare is one of some of the estimates I've seen before. So we have this cost associated with the winter rye, and there's a paper, a couple papers that came out recently saying, what about using winter rye as a biofuel? And this paper in 2015 in the journal Biotechnology and Biofuels comes to the conclusion that planting the winter rye as a cover crop can add significantly to the farmer's income. So that's one of their conclusions, and so you might have some value to the winter rye, not only to reduce the end loss, but also as possibly some income can be involved with it. And they estimated in this paper that the winter rye as a biomass, it has value, this biomass value can be perhaps $150 per megagram or so. And that's actually on the low side. That I think the 150 was the low value that they had. And if you add if you fertilize the rye, you increase that biomass. There are some costs associated, as we mentioned, with the winter rye, and it may be $45 to $75 per megagram. So there's costs with both planting the rye and harvesting it, but that's still taking that difference. These two studies still suggest that this rye as a cover crop can add to the farmer's income. And there's other papers out, too, showing that there's a lot of potential for biomass harvest of winter rye across the U.S. And in this paper here, published in 2013, says about 170 million U.S. tons per year is possible for winter rye across the corn soybean belt. There are, if you're going to use winter rye as a biofuel, it makes sense you do it in where there's corn stover used as a biofuel also, and you do some harvest of the corn stover. And there's a paper that came out recently saying that, you know, there's lots of papers on corn stover harvest and some of the soil quality effects of that, et cetera, but there's very little on what this corn stover harvest will do to nitrate loss to subsurface drainage. And when you add the harvest of the winter rye, there's even less studies. It's very limited, the amount of information out there. So what we did was we used the root zone water quality model to predict the end loss to drainage in central Iowa under the corn stover harvest and winter rye cover crop harvest. These are some of the scenarios that we ran, the NRR being no residue removed, so this is kind of the control treatment, no corn stover harvest, no winter rye planted, and then the RR1 just being the residue removal, and if we remove 50% of the corn stover, you can't remove all of it, 50% is the kind of an average number in the literature as far as how much you can harvest without causing serious soil problems. And then we add a cover crop to this system. And so the third scenario we ran was with a corn stover harvest plus we're planting a cover crop in the fall and we terminate it in late April. And the next to the last scenario is if we have the cover crop planted, we harvest both the cover crop, 50%, or harvest the corn stover, and we do about 90% harvest for the winter rye. And we're also planting the soybean late and harvesting the rye, or terminating the rye and harvesting it a little bit later in May. So we get more biomass that way with almost no predicted reduction in soybean yield. And then the final scenario we did is if we fertilize the rye and we get higher biomass values. And so this is the results, the only results that I'll show here, slide. And we have annual N loss on the y-axis, on the y-axis here we have rye and corn silver production, simulated production. The lighter bars being the rye, the darker being the corn silver. And the end loss to drainage decreases quite a bit with the winter rye. We knew that. And it decreases even further if we harvest the rye. And even if we fertilize it, the rye seems to be taking all of that, just about all of that nitrate up, using it, and you increase the production quite a bit. I think, okay, great, thanks. The average annual fertilized rye biomass is about 4 megagrams per hectare, but the end loss to drainage is still low under that. And so just a few conclusions here. The fertilized rye, a cover crop, can provide about the 4 megagrams per hectare per year. The literature suggests that the rye value can be more than $150 per megagram, so there could be value to that. And there is a cost to planting and harvesting the rye, but it's still a positive, there's still economic benefit there potentially. The end loss of drainage in the fertilized rye is still pretty low, so you can fertilize it, get a lot more crop production or rye production without increasing the end loss. And kind of the overall conclusion would be, at least from our results so far, that this winter rye can be a bioenergy source and have economic and environmental benefits. So again, thanks, Lodge. I really appreciate the work we've been able to do, and other people have been able to work with through that collaboration. So
thank you very much.
Yeah.
We have a couple of questions, minutes for questions.
Dennis.
Rob, did you track the nitrogen in the rye after, you know, you knocked it down? You see the composition pretty quickly,
isn't it? It's a high, the nitrate in there is pretty high. So at least in this study, what we were doing was it's being harvested, you know, right there. We're harvesting 90% of it. There, we are testing that with some field data, though, and so the model is kind of tested against the field data where it's not harvested, it's left in the field, and the model seems to perform pretty well to some extent on the end loss and some of those dynamics with the winter rye. Yeah.
So how good you're doing there with respect to mineralization and nitrogen, and also the loss by denitrification, which probably five.
Right. Yeah. What we just recently did is we have some N2O measurements, and we were looking at the model's prediction of the N2O along with the N loss, and it's on the same plots, set of plots that we tested it with here. The N2O simulations are, you know, less than 10% difference observed and simulated without touching anything with the N2O. So the denitrification, I forget the numbers there. I have the kind of the mass balance of things, but. Yeah, that's a good point, though. We were talking about data and the worth of data, and things like a complete data set. You've got these hidden values, denitrification, mineralization, which can be this black box. And, you know, there is more data out there now, though, with denitrification and N2O. You can find some of that. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Time for one quick question before our break.
Yes.
Very interesting study. I'm just wondering if you compare the results about the center outside and the national as a wide cover with and without fertilizer.
Yeah.
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, in As far as the N2O emissions from the soil and the N loss in drainage on both cover crop and no cover crop, were those measured, right? Was that the question? Oh, without the, okay, yeah, I see what, yeah. We have a lot of data with the model at different fertilizer rates with a main crop of corn and soybean. We don't have anything with fertilizing the rye. So one of the things, I think once you get a model tested, a real use of a model is to expand what data you have in the field and say, well, what if, you know, you can do a lot of what ifs, and one thing is if we fertilize the rye, will we get higher biomass? And we don't have any measurements on that, but maybe this can say that, boy, the model's saying that there's maybe a lot of potential here. We need to measure this in the field to see if that's a correct prediction from the model. So it might identify a field research that needs to be done, because I haven't tested it against the fertilized. Right. Thank you
very much.
Did you account for runoff? You measured the losses.
Yeah.
Assumed through drainage.
Yeah.
Did you account for any runoff?
Yeah. The model does do runoff, and we didn't have measured runoff at this site, but usually the model simulates a very small amount of nitrate in the runoff. And I think some field data kind of supports that. You get a lot more in the drainage. But when you're talking about the water budget, you know, runoff is a huge number that can, we could be missing something here, I guess.
Our experience in the south of Louisiana, runoff is the most major component.
Right. Yeah, for us, it's probably the opposite way. There is some runoff there, and most of the field sites in Iowa that I've worked with, at least in the tile-drained areas, there's not a lot of good runoff numbers from that. So you're kind of having to assume that, you know, the model is simulating some runoff, but is it right? We don't have a number to really test that with. It looks reasonable from our first look, but yeah, no.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Rob.
Thank you.